Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Hurricanes Florence and Michael have inflicted terrible damage on North Carolina over the past month. Dozens of humans and thousands of animals lost their lives, and the economic damage now totals well into the billions of dollars. And while state leaders have taken some promising initial steps in fashioning a recovery, the hard truth is that it will take many years of sustained effort to make a real difference, particularly in areas that were already burdened by decades of neglect and racially discriminatory policies. Policy analyst Brian Kennedy of the North Carolina Budget and Tax Center has studied and written extensively on these issues and joined me in studio earlier this week to share some of his findings. Well, Brian Kennedy, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Great to be here.
We've obviously had the devastation of Hurricane Florence. Michael followed on its tracks. As this seems to always be the case, the people who were hit hardest for the most part were the people who were already struggling in our state. And I know you've written a lot about this issue. Can you sort of give us a 10,000-feet summary of some of the things you're finding and facts we know now about the devastation that's been impacting our state?
Right. So, you know, when it comes to this latest hurricane, Hurricane Florence, we don't yet have a total number for the impact that it had on North Carolina in particular, but we do know it's very similar to the impacts of Hurricane Matthew just 2 years ago. And in a lot of cases, it's worse. So there's a lot of people who have been hit twice now, folks who have yet to rebuild from the first hurricane, who are experiencing, you know, the effects of the second storm. We also know that, as you mentioned, a lot of the communities and towns and counties hit are counties that have persistently struggled and persistently suffered from the effects of inequality. You know, we did a bit of analysis and found that in counties that were impacted by Hurricane Florence had a poverty rate higher than the rest of the counties in the state not impacted. That was true for all ages. That was also true for children. Those counties also typically had lower levels of household income. So it begs the question, what does it mean when these communities that are persistently facing these economic hardships are consistently being hit with these storms? It has a large impact on people's ability to rebuild, to be resilient, and to really weather the storms moving forward.
It seems almost always to be the case. The folks within those already struggling communities who were most affected for the most part are the people who were struggling the most, because we know that, as a general rule, folks who have lower incomes, who have been discriminated against historically, tend to be the people who live in the lowest lying land, the most vulnerable geography. They tend to live in substandard housing that's less likely to be resilient to storms. And so it's just sort of piles on. It's a vicious circle, really.
Right, absolutely. So, you know, Princeville, North Carolina is an excellent example of this. And luckily, Princeville was, for the most part, spared in this latest storm. But it's one of the oldest African-American municipalities in the nation. It was formed by freed blacks after slavery. But the land that they had access to was not prime real estate. It was land that was discarded. It was low-lying. It was in floodplains. Because of a lack of regulatory policies, those communities have been subject to environmental racism. They've been in the path of, you know, the hog lagoons and all these other issues. And so when storms hit, these communities that are resilient, right, they've been in existence for 150 years, but they're disproportionately impacted by these negative issues.
And, of course, the reality that we know now, increasingly are aware of in our state, is that what once was the 100-year floodplain or the 500-year floodplain is increasingly becoming the 10- or 20-year floodplain, and it begs the question of whether it's even sustainable in many low-lying parts of our state to even maintain permanent human habitation. I mean, for a community, for instance, like Princeville, though it escaped Hurricane Florence, it begs the question of, you know, how long can we even maintain communities like this? Even though we have wonderful, resilient people living there, you can't live underwater.
Right. That's a really good question. I think that's something that especially over the past 2 years, has been kind of the top of conversation. I think that when we think about what it means for a community to be resilient, for me, I think that we want people to have choices. So if people have enough income, if they're making high enough wages, if they have access to you know, high quality public education, to healthcare, if they have all the things to make them whole, then they can choose and make decisions that best work for them, their family, and their communities. But when we have communities, for example, that have had persistent levels of poverty in the counties that were hit by Florence, four of those counties have had poverty rates above 20% over the past four decades. So when we have communities that, and where people don't have the options and the abilities to make their own decisions, that can make it hard to decide about whether or not we should rebuild.
In one of the columns you wrote, you noted that in 2016, more than 300,000 people in the 18 counties declared disaster areas after Florence did not have enough food to eat each night. Now, that was before the storm. So when you talk about ideas like, well, why don't these people just move to a new area? Or what if they buy out these houses that these people live in? First of all, most of those people live in property that they're renting. It's not like they own that property. And then even if it was bought out and somehow moved out of the floodplain or taken out of the housing stock, where do they go? What do they use for resources to move to a different community? They're just stuck.
Right. And one thing we've seen over the past several years is a return to a lot of kind of post-recession or pre-recession, economic measures. So we've seen poverty drop to be about where we were right before the recession started. We've seen unemployment drop. We've seen GDP grow. So while we've seen these huge economic growths across the state, they have not been shared across the state, right? So if we want to talk about people moving to places that are less flood prone or less prone to disaster, we have to start thinking about job creation. We have to start thinking about raising the minimum wage. We have to start thinking about building housing that is safe, that is reliable, and that is affordable. So there's a lot of questions that don't get solved by simply moving people from one place to another. We have the resources, we have the tools in order to make these communities stronger. And now we just need to enact policies that actually result in those things happening.
Let's maybe hit on a few more of those. You've quickly touched on some of the policies that we might be pursuing in this state that could be beneficial to people living in poverty everywhere, but in particular, those folks living in some of the areas hard hit by the storms. There is this idea of raising the minimum wage to a living wage, making it easier for folks to find affordable housing, which was a problem even before the storms have come to North Carolina. Are there any others that we would want to emphasize?
I think one that's immediate and relevant now is we really need to think about our state's revenue system. So a couple of different things. One, we've chosen a path of tax cuts over the past several years that has really shifted the tax burden onto low income and working families. So rather than relying on people who are already struggling to be the tax base for our state, we should be asking those who are doing well, who are kind of benefiting from our economic policy, to pay their fair share. An important part of that will also be, making sure that corporations that are wealthy, that are profitable, are also paying their fair share. So as we continue to move into a period of economic growth, we have to continue to think about what is the best way to actually create revenue in our state. What is a way to create revenue that's equitable, that's fair, that invests in communities, and that doesn't rely on people who are already struggling to really bear that burden?
I saw the statistic that the Budget and Tax Center put out recently that literally all of the economic growth in the last decade has gone to the top 1% in North Carolina. Literally, the incomes of the 99% of population have basically been flat or declined. And so in an environment like that, it says something about the tax structure. It says something about the economic policies that we're pursuing. It really begs for some sort of move in a new direction. We're sort of in the midst of several special sessions at the General Assembly on this issue. We'd like to see these big macro changes. Are there any other sort of more immediate changes that they can make? I know we've talked about helping out school children and the employees of schools who lost wages during the storms. Are there any other sort of immediate term fixes or solutions we ought to be looking toward?
One thing that they did, and I will say one thing that they did that was really great, was passing funding to pay for teachers or other school employees who would be out of work. And also prioritizing historically underutilized businesses as recipients to a lot of the recovery funding. And that's an excellent first step. But the next steps will have to be instilling some confidence in the eastern part of the state by tapping into that $2 billion rainy day fund to invest in legal services, right? To invest in temporary housing that is safe, to invest in mold mitigation, also mosquito mitigation, things like that, that are going to have huge differences on people's, day-to-day life as they're still in the process of recovery.
We really appreciate you shining a light on this issue. We know you'll be continuing to do it. We'll have you back again soon, hopefully to discuss some successes in the months ahead. But either way, we want to know what's going on. So thanks for all you're doing.
Always thanks for having me.
Coming up next, people directly impacted by Florence describe the reality they're enduring in Robeson County. Stay with us.